This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave. Joy 94.9, this is the World Wide Wave live from Melbourne, Australia. I'm Tom, and the World Wide Wave gang is back in full this week, as I'm also joined in the studio by both Squirrel and Matt. Hello, gang.
Can't tell you how good it is to have you both back.
Oh, it's good to be back. Also, with a special guest appearance in the studio tonight, we welcome Shannon. You'll be hearing more from Shannon in the future, I'm sure of it. But say hi for now. Hi. Welcome, Shannon, to the World Wide Wave. Matt, as a side note, fantastic show last week. You pulled it off. It was excellent.
It's amazing what you can do under pressure. Thanks, guys.
It's good to fly solo once in a while. This week, the World Wide Wave stops over in the African nation of Uganda. We speak with Catherine Fairfax Wright, director of the documentary Call Me Kuchu. We also hear from Cleo Kambugu, a 27-year-old Ugandan trans activist working as a support officer in the Uganda transgender-led organization. We ask you a question. Where in the world do you think it would be most challenging to be a member of the LGBT community? How would you respond if your name and address was published in a newspaper accusing you of sexual deviance and that you preyed on children? If you were gay, could you trust your friends and family not to report you to the police if you lived in this country? Bit of a downer, but let's bring it up quickly. As always, we like to get things started with some music, a little more upbeat. We're all about multiculturalism here at the World Wide Wave. So what better to get things started than Lou Bega, a German musician of Italian and Ugandan descent, with his 1999 hit Mambo No. 5.
I bet he could count on friends and family.
This is Mambo No. 5.
Joy 94.9 World Wide Wave, and that was Lou Bega with his big hit Mambo No. 5.
And you are listening to the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight we're stopping off at Uganda, a rather grim and serious country, and we got some very interesting guests for us. But if you have any thoughts on what's happening in Uganda right now, or as you're listening to show during the show, feel free to SMS us at 0427-JOY-949 or give us a ring. Robert's on the front switch, 1-300-JOY-949. And you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
And we're live on Facebook. So World Wide Wave, search us on Facebook, like us, and we'll keep you posted throughout the week.
This week, World Wide Wave in Uganda, and it is time for not-so-fun fast facts. Officially, the Republic of Uganda, it is a landlocked country in East Africa. Both male and female homosexual activity, straight out illegal. Under the penal code, carnal knowledge against the order of nature between two males carries a potential penalty of life imprisonment.
Don't they also punish you if you have a friend who's gay and you don't report it?
Correct. There have been laws passed that basically say you need to tell all, and if you don't, then you're guilty of a crime as well. Our friends over in England brought these laws about. They were first placed under British colonial rule, and the laws came in the 19th century. Those laws were enshrined in the Penal Code Act of 1950. And still around today.
I think all the gays around the world need to get together and just sue the British government.
Well, I think you've got a case there, definitely. A lot of the former colony countries. According to a 2007 poll, 96% of Ugandan residents believe that homosexuality is a way of life that society should not accept. This was the fifth highest rate of non-acceptance in all of the 45 countries surveyed. Now, a few years later, a different poll conducted in 2010 revealed that 11% of Ugandans viewed homosexual behavior as being morally acceptable. So you went from 96% saying, no, it's wrong, we should not accept it,
to 89%.
To 11% saying, yeah, maybe it's okay. So baby steps, literally baby steps.
A lot of this, I think, comes back to the way the so much of the conversation, so much of the dialogue around homosexuality is linked to pedophilia. The law itself links carnal knowledge with, you know, having sex with somebody the same sex in the same bucket as having sex with an animal. You know, the rhetoric around this is quite shameful.
And this is in a country where there's, at least in 2007, didn't they report, there's 500,000 homosexuals, according to the SMUG group, the Sexual Minorities Uganda group. Did they not report that there's literally 500,000 homosexuals? That's a lot of people to make feel bad.
It is a lot of people to make feel bad. And you're right, Matt, the laws get to be just insane. In October of 2009, a member of the Ugandan parliament introduced the Anti-Homosexual Act. This was broadened to include the criminalization of same-sex relationships in Uganda and introduced the death penalty for serial offenders. Individuals or companies that promote LGBT rights would be fined or imprisoned or both. Persons in authority who do not tell on their neighbor, basically. If you know someone's gay and you don't report it within 24 hours, you can face up to 3 years imprisonment.
Wow. And that, when you were saying earlier about the organizations, we'll hear later in the show when we speak with a transgendered activist in Uganda, is quite concerned about that because it means that organizations, for example, Save the Children, Amnesty International, who are operating in Uganda and just by nature have that, we think it's okay, homosexuality, human rights or gay rights type attitude, that the activist is quite concerned that all of those organizations will be fined and many of them will choose not to operate in Uganda because of that really oppressive atmosphere.
Well, the fact that the Ugandan government has kicked out a whole lot of NGOs on the basis that they were promoting homosexuality and undermining the national culture. So a total of 38 non-government organizations who are in there doing support work to build Uganda have actually been kicked out by the government.
Correct. The government said that they were encouraging homosexuality as if it was the best form of sexual behavior. Now, that could arguably go in agreement. The reason that they were using it and, again, bringing it back to things like recruiting young children into homosexuality, the basis of their argument is just absolute fluff. We were talking about how ridiculous the laws in Uganda were getting. As part of that 2009 law, they also said that you think you leave your country, you're being oppressed in your country, you go somewhere else, say Canada, our friends in Canada who help the world.
Canadian Railroad.
You go
bless
to
them.
Canada, you're happy, you're out. If you're from Uganda, Uganda can now request that you be sent back to Uganda to be punished for the laws against nature. That's correct. No country's going to let you do it.
Not something that the countries have been doing. And Canada's been one of the countries that has actually been accepting refugees, sexual refugees, if you like.
Correct, yes. But according to the laws of Uganda, you can be requested to be sent back, although it's unlikely
how
that
scary
a
would
country
be?
Would do that.
I mean, how frightening denied, would that be if you were living somewhere and you think you're safe, but you know in the back of your head that at any moment you could potentially be extradited back?
Scary. I think you'd want to choose your country carefully. Things aren't all bad in Uganda, and we don't want to suggest that it's all bad. not so much good, but at least the courts are siding with the LGBT community in some instances. In December of 2008, an Ugandan high court ruled that Uganda's constitution applies to all people, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. Now, how that actually plays out in day-to-day life, we're going to hear some about that. But at least the High Court of Uganda has said enough is enough. Apparently you can pass a law that says it's illegal to be gay, but you can't take away from the person's constitutional rights, according to them.
And we'll be hearing very shortly how some of the rights groups within Uganda have been using the courts to, in fact, draw a bit of a line in the sand. We're speaking next with Catherine Fairfax Wright, the director of the documentary Call Me Kutchu, which was a sellout at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival this year. Time for a bit of a song, I think.
I think we should have a little music now, something a little closer to Uganda. Here we have Chameleon with Value Value.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
This is Audrey Gochran, the director of Amnesty International's Africa program on the World Wide Wave.
Joy 94.9, World Wide Wave. And we've got our SMS open at 0427-JOY949. And you can email us on air at joy.org.au.
And we have a message.
We do. Elka says, wow, there are some hardcore laws in Uganda, especially having to report friends. We're so lucky by comparison. And yes, we've missed you too, Elka. Welcome back. This week, the World Wide Wave is in Uganda, and we spoke with someone who knows a little bit more firsthand about what's going on.
So we spoke to one of the directors of the documentary Call Me Kutchu. People may have seen it at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. It is doing the rounds, sellout here in Melbourne, and really well received. Not a happy movie, but certainly extremely well made. We're speaking now with Catherine Fairfax Wright, the director. And we started by asking Catherine where the name of the documentary Call Me Kutchu came from.
Well, Kutchu is actually a term that the LGBT Ugandans have sort of selected for themselves as a catch-all phrase by which they self-identify.
Is it stated in a way that it is it a challenge? Is it defiance? Is it saying, look, call me gay, that's okay?
I think it was just kind of like in the early stages of their movement, they really wanted one term to sort of unify them and be able to differentiate themselves by. And so, as it was described to me, it was kind of too confusing to start right off the bat with all these different terms, transgender, lesbian, gay, bisexual, intersex, all these things. And so they just chose one term.
When you first decided to make this documentary, what were you aiming to achieve?
Well, there were a few things. I mean, we're increasingly disturbed by what was happening in various places with, anti-gay legislation being tabled and increases in hostility towards LGBT peoples. And so, at the greatest level, we just wanted to do our best to represent them, as the humans that they are, and therefore hope to increase the degree to which people see LGBT rights as a fundamental part of human rights. But Uganda in particular interested us because we were hearing about an increasingly organized LGBT community there. We had heard about a case of a transgender guy who had won a case in the high court granting him his civil liberties after a police raid. But then at the same time, the anti-homosexuality bill had been tabled. So it was just interesting that you could have, and then you also have sodomy laws on the books. And so we're interested in how one place could have all of these things.
The central character in the documentary is David Kato, who's Uganda's first publicly open gay person and really became the face of gay people in Uganda. What was he like as a person?
He was really an extraordinary guy, which is why quite early on in the process, we really zeroed in on him as our main character. Obviously well before we knew he was going to be murdered or anything like that. But he was just tremendously devoted to his cause. He was very good at wrapping his head around every aspect of building a movement, from the grassroots level up to, coordinating with foreign governmental bodies and NGOs and going to trainings abroad and all these kinds of things to increase the level of sophistication of their activism. But beyond that, he was also just, you know, like a really charismatic guy, a really fun guy to be around. Fiercely intelligent, with a great sense of humor, you know, almost verging on rude. He was just always spoke his mind, and it was just a pleasure to be around him, and he was really captivating to film. He really felt the need to document things, and he was also, you know, the one that was really behind Ben, like creating an archive of all of their newspaper clippings and all of the times that they, their rights had been infringed and all this kind of stuff. But he was also, you know, working with the UN, and, you know, sometimes he was the first one to get angry, you know, in a public gathering or something. Other times he really kept his cool. He just really tried to adapt his activism to whatever matter was at hand.
Now, as you said, David was tragically murdered while you were filming this documentary. How did that change what you were doing?
Well, I mean, right away we, of course, felt a tremendous sense of responsibility to push his story as widely as possible and really get it seen by as many people in the world as we could. But in order to do that, we knew we had to make as good of a film as possible. You know, and that was a challenge, given that our main character was no longer able to participate in it. So right away, it was just kind of trying to figure out how we could still make a great film and be able to, you know, share his story with the world.
There's a strong view in Uganda that homosexuality is a disease of the West, if you like. Now, you were over there as a Westerner asking questions about homosexuality. How were you perceived as a filmmaker?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like in some ways where we came from didn't play into it too much in that when we were talking to people, there wasn't a sense of us bringing it ourselves. There was more a sense of people just it being kind of a given which side of the aisle we stood on, you know. So when we'd be talking to a preacher or Giles, the managing editor of the Rolling Stone, you know, that's why he would say things like, well, you may believe in the gay, like you guys believe in gay rights, but over here in Uganda, it's different. So it wasn't a sense of like, what are you doing here? It was more a sense of like, let me tell you what's going on here. Let me tell you about my country.
And now you are from the US, and one of the issues that came out in the film is around evangelical American pastors coming into Uganda and almost encouraging violence. How do you feel about that as an American?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's incredibly problematic for me as an American to be there in that kind of climate. But it also gives me all the greater sense of responsibility to tell the story as I know it to be true, you know. And not only that, but not only are a lot of Americans being misinformed, I think part of the problem is that Americans, sadly, just aren't informed about this at all. You know, it's one thing to really make the choice to believe in what your pastors are doing, you know, with the anti-gay rhetoric, but it's another thing to just not even know that it's going on.
That's the voice of Catherine Fairfax Wright, director of the documentary Call Me Kutchu. There was one, I've seen the documentary, there's one part that really stood out in my memory, which was David Kato's funeral. So this is, I guess, the most visible gay person in Uganda. Whenever there's something going on, that's who the media go to report and show his image. And despite all this homophobia, he's happy to go out there and fight. He was beaten to death, and at his funeral, his local pastor came, basically crashed the funeral, bought a tribe of people, and there was a near riot. The friends of David Kato had to actually pick up his coffin, walk away to another place and have their farewell ceremony. That's the degree of angst, of pain that, you know, that gay people in Uganda are going through at the moment.
Joy 94.9 Worldwide Wave in Uganda this week, and I think it's time to take a little mental break from the seriousness. We have the Ugandan pop music duo Radio and Weasel.
I will fear not evil.
Follow LGBT International News and current affairs.
Like us on Facebook at W3Joy or visit us at W3Joy.org.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
It's the Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. We're speaking with Catherine Fairfax Wright, the director of the documentary Call Me Kutchu. Spoke to some pretty vile people. The newspaper that publishes the names of people that they felt were gay, pastors and bishops who espouse very unchristian views. How do you maintain your levelness, your journalistic role as a filmmaker, you know, without wanting to grab them and say, that's not right?
Yeah, I mean, at first, I think the first really openly or outwardly anti-gay person that we interviewed was David Bahati, who was author of the anti-homosexuality bill. And in that initial interview, there was some sense of us, like, wanting to kind of combat him and, you know, give him hard questions and try to give us the answers that we wanted and stuff like that. But you quickly realize that you're certainly not going to change his opinion in that interview, right? And if his words are coming across to the audience as if he's saying them just because he's been pinned in a corner, then it's not going to be a very successful interview. You know, you're not going to show people that you shouldn't believe in him if it comes across as though he's being unfairly, you know, coerced into saying things. So we very quickly changed our approach to just let the people speak for themselves as much as they could. You know, we really, people are often like, how did you get guys to say those things? And we really just posed very simple questions and then stopped asking questions and just kept the camera rolling and let him keep talking, you know? And those are the moments where I think it's most powerful what he's saying, because he's very calm and collected, speaking in a soft voice and just telling you that he thinks, you know, all of these people should be killed. And that's much more powerful, I think, to me, you know, in terms of how the viewer is going to respond to that.
Now, the film Call Me Kutchu, it played to a sellout session here at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival a couple of months ago. How has it been received around the rest of the world?
Yeah, I mean, overall, it's been pretty extraordinarily positive. I mean, thus far, it's also, you know, mostly played on the festival circuit, which is, of course, a self-selecting audience. But, you know, we have started to share it more and more with people beyond film festival goers and LGBT festival goers in particular. And even they are really seeing it as a film that's kind of universally applicable, you know, and that there's very human themes that come up in it and are, you know, people from any walk of life are able to identify it with it. And, you know, that's kind of very much what we hoped for while filming it. So it's very satisfying to feel like that is how people are responding to it.
Well, thank you for bringing us the story of David and his friends fighting for basic justice in Uganda. It inspires defiance. It's heartbreaking. It's thought-provoking. It's extremely concerning, but it's truly inspirational as well. So thank you for bringing that to the world.
You're very welcome. Thank you for taking the time to watch it.
It's the World Wide Wave, where tonight we are in Uganda. Really interesting hearing about the newspapers there. The newspapers, there's a couple in particular, are absolutely homophobic to the extreme. So they will list the names and addresses and type of car and all sorts of personal details of anybody that they think is gay. And they say that's their, you know, their right, their responsibility. In fact, the guy that they interviewed, the editor of one of the newspapers in that documentary, Call Me Kutchu, actually quite delighted in it.
Do you know what's interesting about that? And just jumping back to the fact of when I was trying to put that slight glimmer of hope in Uganda, the constitutional court, the high court, always comes back at the end of these things and says, you're not supposed to be doing that. But they just sort of punish the paper with a little bit of cash, and then another paper does it. And there's more than one instance where the court has come back and said, you can't do that. That is against the constitutional right of the people that you're doing. But clearly, it's not enough, because 3 years later, a different paper does the exact same thing, well, to a tenth degree.
In a way, you wonder if it's like publishing the names of criminals. You know, if someone's a hardened criminal and the Age or the Herald Sun had record of that, we would love to know, and we would cheer them on for their expose, even if they got a little slap and a little fine for like breaking some law that they weren't meant to. We'd think, no, that's good journalism. They're exposing those bad people in our community. I just wonder, you know, what if that's what the sentiment is. So although there's some legal slaps on the wrist, what's really going on there is probably overall community support.
lot of seemingly community support, a lot of international condemnation. Australia is one of the countries that has formally, both through Parliament and through a message from the minister, voiced formal concerns against it. Canada has been a great activist, and it seems to be the one thing that is stopping this law. It's called the Kill the Gays Bill, stopping it from going through. There's quite famously quoted the Speaker of the House just before Christmas said she wanted it to go through as a present for all Ugandans, go through before Christmas. But it still hasn't made it to the Parliament, and there seems to be this reluctance that if they do, there will be massive
international backlash
to them in the way of aid and the like.
And that's something that we hear when we speak in this next segment from Cleo Kambugu, a 27-year-old Ugandan trans activist working as a program officer for Trans Support Initiative in a transgender-led organization in Uganda. Now, we have obscured and slightly altered the name and who this person is because it's for their safety that they're not known on an international podcast. However, they do bring up the fact that international pressure is helping them, and that's one of the points.
So let's hear a bit from Cleo, who spoke to us by phone in Uganda earlier in the week.
Well, it's quite hard being transgender in Uganda because it's sort of camouflage into the mainstream corporate society. So it's really hard. I'm currently on hormones. So it's kind of easy right now, but before I started my hormone therapy, it was really hard because it was difficult to pass as a woman because in Uganda, people don't really know what it means to be transgender. Our African culture towards other forms of sexualities, we don't feel so comfortable. In Uganda, being a homosexual was viewed as being synonymous with being a pedophile, with all these bad images.
The government has been trying to bring in the so-called Kill the Gays Bill for some time. If that does go through the Parliament, and it does have support from both sides of the Parliament, how will that affect your life?
This bill has been on for a while. It's been shelled and reshelled and reshelled and then brought back. If that bill actually gets passed, the people will feel like now they have a right to their homophobia and their transphobia, and they'll feel like they have a right to kill anyone, acting anyone who is actually suspected to be gay.
We're just going to pause that for a moment here. That was Cleo Kambugu, and I just want to quote what this 27-year-old Ugandan transgender activist said. They'll feel like they have the right to kill anyone.
Well, she says that they'll have the right to kill anyone that's suspected of being gay. That does sort of imply the right to kill anyone.
Interesting that she also sort of talks about transgenders being unknown. So, you know, being gay is linked to pedophilia, but transgender is something that's quite unknown as well.
Yeah, and again, the clip quality is just, you know, due to the nature of the Skype system, a bit difficult, but we do feel that Cleo has some important messages, so let's continue listening to this clip.
Do you have a friend, you know, that you are homosexual and transgender person, and they don't get to report you 24 hours, then they also should be arrested. And we've been working with some organizations, some of them legal organizations, some of them medical organizations. Part of that bill say that they could lose their licenses. So we'll see the population go deep underground and wallow in sickness and poor sex. And we'll see them ostracized and arise in transphobia, arise in homosexuality, in homophobia, because people will see that they now have a actually kill gay people.
This homophobia and transphobia does degenerate into violence against LGBT people. And the most notable one, the one that made headlines, was the activist David Catto. You are an activist. Do you feel threatened and unsafe? Do you fear for your life?
Well, we feel threatened all the time. Being an activist means that you have to deal away with having a personal life. Because every day working in Uganda is a hard thing. So it's always hard. It's always difficult working in this country because, you know, if anyone probably touches your face and they've seen it somewhere before on TV or in a newspaper, then they would maybe attack you or something. If you're always under constant fear of being killed or being attacked, at some point you feel numb, because that's reality. and you sort of forget how serious it is, that there is a lot of misinformation going around. There is a lot of ignorance going around, and all they get is this media that's always negative, and these political people who are very negative stuff, and then the religious people who are very negative towards us.
All the time threatened, every day walking in this country is difficult. Numb, just because that's the reality. Wow. Startling statements.
And this idea that you really have to go underground. So when you hear somebody who takes up the mantle of being an activist when there is the threat of being, a daily threat of being killed or hurt, gee, that's brave.
Yeah, so let's just listen to the last minute of the segment with Cleo.
International community has been very vocal about the laws and the homophobia going on in Uganda. Your local politicians have then used that to say, well, being gay is a Western thing, it's not a part of our culture. Do you think this international involvement is helping or hurting your cause?
The problem with the people that we are working with internationally is that most of them do not comprehend our people. One of the campaigns that the anti-homosexuality movement has against us is that this is a Western influence, and there is some conspiracy behind everything, but like a homosexual agenda, that's a conspiracy. When people here see our connection with such people, they sort of feel like the fact that homosexuality is a Western import is validated. So we try to educate them on how they could talk, on how they should relate to our government. They should be hostile. Maybe they should be more indirect. Maybe they should do more a private lobbying instead of going into media.
It's a worldwide wave. You're hearing the voice of Cleo Kambugu, who is a 27-year-old Ugandan trans activist working inside Uganda. This interesting challenge that they have of whether the support of the international community is a good thing or a bad thing. The local politicians making the most of this, saying homosexuality is a Western construct. The homosexuals have an agenda, not wanted in our country. We hear this quite a lot in particularly African countries. But is it the international community that is stopping these horrendous laws from coming in at the moment? Real challenge to figure out, you know, which way to go. All praise, though, to the Canadian government. The Canadian government has been really at the forefront of fighting these laws. They have been funding some groups within Uganda, so the Ugandan activists are able to maintain their voice and present their voice, but they've had the funding support of the Canadian government behind them.
And I remember also, I believe it was Yves from Cameroon saying, I'm gay, my black lover's gay, I'm black, we're all black. It's an African thing too. So also good on those activists who are taking the time to speak up both for their race and for their sexuality.
Hi everyone, my name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy, and lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, you're on the Worldwide Wave. Tonight we're in Uganda, and that was Lisa Marie Presley's Dirty Laundry. Tom?
Yes?
What's the connection?
A little bit of who knew here on the Worldwide Wave. Daniel Keig, born November 6, 1964, in Uganda. Now, he is the former husband of singer and songwriter Lisa Marie Presley, and he's also the bass guitarist in her band. And let's face it, who knew that Lisa Marie Presley was selling music?
Who knew she wasn't married to Michael Jackson?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. Flashback. Yes, here on the Worldwide Wave of Joy 94.9. This week, we are in Uganda, learning that things aren't so good.
And there's another documentary on its way out to do the film circuit. It's called God Loves Uganda. And it involves some undercover reporters that went firsthand behind the scenes of these evangelical American churches that are trying very hard to convert people and very much espousing the anti-homosexuality message and gay hate, basically, within Uganda. So it'll be interesting to see that one.
Let me get this straight. Are these churches like sending emails over? Are they sending people over? How are they doing this?
They're taking their message and their money to a very poor country, and that's why the message is being so strongly received. So this is a very aggressive campaign. They're basically using homosexuality or homophobia to, you know, drive people to Christianity and to their evangelical ways.
Now, not everyone's happy with this, you could understand, but you mentioned something about somebody is actually going after one of the evangelicals.
Indeed. I think that, and this is this seems to be quite this seems to happen quite a bit. Even when the gay community in Uganda gets knocked down, they jump back up again. The sexual minorities of Uganda, or SMUG, have taken an American evangelist, Scott Lively, to federal court in America. So there's basically a law that allows outsiders to take somebody in America to court.
I love America. Anybody can sue anybody.
That's right. Yeah. All about suing. So this quite small activist group in Uganda is taking one of the evangelists to court for violating international law by inciting persecution of gay men and lesbians in Uganda.
And hopefully that'll be heard in the District of New York, where things are on our side, and he'll probably lose.
And there you go. And look, they've also had, Uganda had its first Pride Parade last year. So this is, again, a place where it's illegal to be gay. They came out and had their first weekend of Pride events. They were harassed by police and a few were arrested and then detained without charge, but they were very pleased that they had their first Pride event.
And you had a really good point earlier, Matt. You were talking while the music was off about how it might seem that they get knocked down or activists, something bad will happen, they get murdered, but still the movement gets back up again and someone else, someone like Cleo, rises to take the place of the person who's been knocked down. It's that old song, get knocked down, but I get up again.
Up again, yeah. And look, incredibly brave. I mean, you know, for people like Cleo, you just have to take your hat off that knowing what they're up against and the physical danger that could happen any time. You know, this is homophobia is a national sport. It's going right throughout the community. There is this threat that your friends will dob you in. But they still stand up and say, well, no, well, I'm going to fight for a better future for gay and lesbian people in Uganda.
And say good on them.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is the World Wide Wave. This week we have been stopped over in Uganda.
And a big thank you to everybody who's been involved in the show tonight. Catherine Fairfax Wright, the director of the documentary Call Me Kutchu. That's just about to be released here in Australia, so keep an eye on your local gay DVD store. The very brave Cleo Kambugu, the 27-year-old Ugandan trans activist who took the time out to share some of her stories. And also a thank you to Amnesty International in Africa, who helped us track down Cleo for tonight's interview.
And a thank you to Elka for her message, as well as Robert for manning the front desk.
And I think we have to reiterate, and we have to, as we ramp things up, we have to say again that the truly inspirational point of this show is that no matter how tough things get and how many times people are knocked down, someone continues to pick up the torch and lead the way. And they've got a long way to go in Uganda, but there are people out there that are fighting the fight.
And we wish them every bit of luck. Now, stick around. Coming up next, we've got Ben and the team from The Locker Room. They are interviewing US diver Greg Louganis and Australian and Victorian hockey player Gus Johnson, who came out in 2010. Come back to hear us next week. You can. Our show is on Belize, the Central American country where they are taking the fight to the Supreme Court to decriminalise homosexuality. I think it's about time for us to go. You can follow us during the week on Facebook. That's Worldwide Wave on Facebook. Like us, and we post stories from around the world throughout the week. And we're back here 8 o'clock next Monday night as well.
As always, we thank you for riding the Worldwide Wave. Until next week, we leave you as we started with some music.
This is Michael Chris's Kabi Iti Wange. Catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.